Cheryl Sparrow Connection. I'm Kim Arndt, and I'm filling in for Rochelle while she's off enjoying the sun and the surf. And what I do is I am a psychotherapist in private practice, focusing on depth work, Jungian type of psychology, using archetypes and dream work and the like. And I'm going to be guest hosting for Rochelle when she's out of town. We have a wonderful guest today, fabulous, in fact. Her name is Ariadne Green. She's a foremost dream interpreter, therapist, shaman, healer, and teacher of the soul who's going to be discussing with us her books. The latest one that she just finished is called Divine Compliment. Welcome, Ariadne.
Thanks, Kim, and I'm happy to be on the show today to talk about a topic that's a favorite for everybody and for those looking for their soulmate. I'm an author whose first book came out in 2001 and was published by Warner Books, called Ariadne's Book of Dreams. And so I'm considered a dream expert and have traveled a lot internationally teaching dream work and shamanism. And about 7 years ago, I had a profound experience in that I had a dream of a man coming into my life who held the promise of a real soulmate kind of relationship. At the time, I didn't know what the dream was about, but it turned out that it was announcing this person coming into my life. So that's kind of what sparked my latest book, Divine Compliment, as well as a lot of divine messages from Jesus and God and an unfolding of my own creative destiny that brought me to write actually two books on the topic. And the truth is that Divine Compliment, the first book, is coming out in 2 months. And then at the end of the year, the second book of that series will be out, and that'll be in about December.
Oh, well, congratulations. And it sounds like a lot of good information and discussion for everyone out there who's looking for their divine compliment. And based on what you just said, I'm assuming that part of your message is everyone has a soulmate?
Well, right. And I like to use the word divine compliment because it best explains the soulmate relationship. I think there's a lot of confusion out there because people are trying to understand this kind of miraculous connection that they seem to have with someone, whether it be their mate or someone who enters into their life. And there are a lot of, you know, authors who have basically come out and said, you know, we can have any number of complementary matches who can fulfill our life, and that's very true. So the word soulmate has kind of fit into that kind of description and theory. And then there are people who don't believe in the concept at all, mm-hmm. and believe it's kind of romantic thinking or that
magical.
It's an impossible kind of thing.
Yes.
But what is interesting is that there was a Gallup poll that was done a few years ago in which they interviewed couples, and they asked them, you know, did they believe that it was it important for them to marry their soulmate? And 88% of them said yes, that they believed that there was one person in the world who was tailored for them. And then 87% of that same group of singles, they said that when the time was right, that they were confident that their soulmate would just show up in their life by divine timing and that they would know and recognize them. So, you know, even though we have skeptics out there, we have a preponderance of people who believe that there's one person in the world for them. And what is it that they're tapping into? Why do they believe such a romantic notion? Well, I think it's because they're tapping into a soul memory. And they're tapping into a dimension of this spirit that they recognize. And in truth, our divine complement is someone who we are integrally linked to at the dimension of spirit. and through a very important signature within our hearts. And this isn't our ordinary heart that beats somebody, somebody, thump. This is the heart of our spirit, a beautiful, beautiful matrix that God created for us. And when God created us two by two. And our complement was meant to match us in a very beautiful way with certain qualities, an intelligence, so to speak, that didn't duplicate our own, but complemented our own. So in, you know, when we bring that down to earth, what does that mean? That means that, you know, we carry with us our spirit. And that spirit has a link to another soul or spirit that is constantly in communication and constantly co-creating. And what we find is that when soulmates finally come together, they discover, lo and behold, they were kind of on similar paths during their life. You know, there are synchronicities and little clues that connect them in a very mysterious way. Mm-hmm. Well, I call this a divine design. And if I can share a little bit of a story, actually, it happened today. I went to Office Mart to get some ink because my printer ran out of ink. And I met a couple there, and I told them I was an author and that my newest book was called Divine Complement and that it was all about the spiritual terrain of soulmate relationships. And she says, oh, I believe my husband and I are definitely soulmates because there were so many things that, you know, clues that we put together after we met that it really made me believe we were meant to be. She said, first of all, our grandfathers both worked side by side and for the same company. When we were growing up, our families lived next door to each other for a few years. And she said, unbelievably, they never met during that period of time. But once she reached adulthood, she had bought a house, and it turned out that her divine complement and soulmate bought a house two doors down from her. And they finally met, and sparks flew, and that was the story.
Yeah. Well, what I'm wondering is there are a lot of stories like that, and people who I think have found their divine complement feel that deep spiritual connection, sometimes across lifetimes.
Right.
And at the same time, it seems like there's so many people who are having a lot of difficulty either meeting their divine complement or recognizing that person in their life.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, you know, our hearts have to be open and a welcome mat has to be put out for our complementary partner. And we have to be kind of evolutionarily ready for that level of committed partnership. And it may not be the right time. You have to understand that before the incarnation, what we did was we kind of planned out kind of the storyline of our life. And in that storyline, we actually kind of set a period of time in which we would meet. Because, you know, our lives are all about, you know, having to make up for karma with lots and lots and lots of people. And for some soulmates, it means that they may end up meeting someone else first, marrying and divorcing, or their spouses will die. And it's just that, you know, the timing isn't right. Mm-hmm. For other people, they, you know, are out hunting when they should be tending to, you know, what are the blocks that are keeping them from creating the opportunity for their soulmate to come in. There was a dream from a particular woman who had shared a dream in which she was in a garden and she was digging in the ground and, she came across a kind of a wall or a brick or something in the ground, and she had to dig around it and get underneath. Well, once she dug deep enough, she was able to pull up two tulip bulbs that were in the flower garden, and they were joined together. Well, I immediately recognized that as a twin soul dream, because two lips is the promise of romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
And the two bulbs joined together was symbolic for the twin soul connection. So there was some old grief or stuff to unearth before she was really ready to create the opening in her life. Many people search for a soulmate high and low, and maybe they've even made a wish list of somebody who they, you know, want to be able to attract. You know, I meet a lot of people now who create these long wish lists that make it, you know, sound like, you know, what they wanted for Christmas from Santa Claus. And
it's like they can order it on Amazon.com.
Right, right. And, you know, it would be nice if we could Google in some keywords and find our soulmate that way, you know, online. But, you know, that's not the way that creatively the divine design is meant to happen. You know, after interviewing hundreds of couples, I heard the most phenomenal stories of how people met through serendipity. Sometimes their parents were the matchmakers. There was a woman who worked at a flower shop, and this guy came in, and she thought he was perfect for her daughter, and she made the connection, you know, after he returned to the flower shop several times. She knew, she psychically picked up that this person was significant, and, you know, she saw the connection. So, you know, there are a lot of people going online hunting for their soulmates. Even, you know, eHarmony.com now has changed their whole advertising campaign from, you know, doing this compatibility test in which you get matched based on, you know, your values, your attitudes, what you want in a relationship. And they changed it from, you know, this intellectual model to, you know, find your true soulmate, experience true spiritual chemistry, you know. So they were paying attention to probably their own research, which was probably the same research that I ran into, that, you know, 88% of people believe there's one person in the world for them.
Can you maybe speak a little bit to the idea of, it seems like sometimes people are looking for, quote, a soulmate to complete them, like something's missing in them. Whereas
right.
I hear you talking about a soulmate or a divine complement, like you're saying, as a complement in partnership. Do you see a difference there?
Well, oh yes, a little bit. It's true that everybody yearns to fulfill their promise. You know, before they, you know, came in, we made a promise to connect with our soulmate. And that becomes an unconscious craving. But you're right. A lot of people are looking for the wrong, you know, archetype of a soulmate. They're, you know, maybe they had a lonely childhood and they're seeking companionship. Maybe they had such an abusive relationship with their family that they're looking for a protector. Maybe they have to have a perfect body archetype in order to feel proud of themselves.
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, and, you know, I talk about, you know, what I call the fall from grace and all these things, these wrong attitudes and that create a lot of mental anguish for people. I speak to in my book, and I call it the fall from grace, and I examine, you know, the online dating, and I examine some of, you know, the quest for romantic love and the legacy traps that we can fall into when we're looking for a soulmate. And I actually kind of poo-poo the idea of making a wish list. What I found was those people who were really struggling to find their soulmate, they did one thing that proved successful in bringing their soulmate to them. You know what that was?
I'd love to know, and I'm sure everyone else would.
They surrendered their list, and they said a prayer to God to please send them the perfect person for them.
Well, it sounds like in order to connect with that spiritual realm, one has to get past their ego ideas about what would be right for them.
Right,
because how
right.
could we, in our small ego, comprehend a spiritual design so much bigger?
Well, you know, our ego wants to hold on to, you know, our false persona of who we think we are.
Right.
And most of us, you know, a lot of people don't really quest to discover their authentic self. But what our soulmate actually does for us is our soulmate coaxes out who we truly are, our authentic self, so that when they come into our lives, one thing that we find is that people may have a profound spiritual awakening, you know, that divine spark that happens when soulmates meet suddenly changes them. I interviewed a couple outside of Starbucks one day, and the guy said, you know, before I met my soulmate, I was, you know, lost. I, you know, didn't have any career goals. I didn't have, any kind of self-concept. And she came into my life, and it was like instantly I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I was. I knew what made me happy. Because that person's energy or synergy
yeah.
coaxed out the authentic person that person was.
It
was a profound awakening. And that's what our soulmate does for us, our divine complement, like no other relationship can.
It sounds like he woke up to himself by virtue of being with her.
Right, right, exactly. But you have to understand, because of the link at the heart, there's an energy exchange that happens.
Yes.
So that her spiritual energy actually awakened him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
And, huh?
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, I hear that in some ways from the couples that I interview, because they say, you know, they don't know what it was. But all of a sudden, things changed for them. You know, they saw this person and they knew almost instantly, you know. I remember a funny quote from Lucille Ball. They asked her when she fell in love with Desi, was it love at first sight? And she says, no, it took 5 minutes. So it's kind of that instant recognition. Now, that doesn't happen for everybody. Sometimes our divine complement will be in our life for a long time, and we don't recognize them for who they are. They may have been a childhood friend or a high school sweetheart, or our families may have, you know, have been friends, and, you know, we don't recognize it until really later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we can have that kind of divine connection with our best friend, and who might be of the opposite sex or in a same sex relationship, maybe the same sex, and they don't fit our belief system about, you know, our desirable mate, and we
right.
may, you know, negate that relationship because we're too clinging to our ideals. You know, I have to have this.
Yes.
I, you know, have to have somebody who has this amount of money in the bank.
Right.
You know, oh, yeah, that person can be my best friend, but, you know, I want more for myself. But what they don't realize is that the karmic contracts that they come into with are important to fulfill. And, you know, in some cases, it may mean sacrifice to be with one's true divine complement. But in the end, we will have, you know, redeemed ourselves, and in the end, we will have fulfilled the promise that we made in the beginning, and that's far more important than any other promise that we make in our life. You know, if we promise something to our parents to always remain with them and support them, you know, and then we wave bye to our divine complement because, you know, we can't, you know, tear apart the family or whatever it is, we are sacrificing our greater promise, and our soul suffers as a result, and we end up, you know, never completing the karma that we were meant to complete in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And our life won't be as fulfilling.
Right. Well, I'd like to go back for a second when you were saying, you know, the person could be right in front of you, basically, and you can't recognize them because you've got your own ideas. And then you said, you know, in the end, maybe you sacrifice some things, but it's a lot more important to end up with your divine complement. And likewise, using the example of Lucille Ball with Desi Arnaz, whose relationship was fraught with conflict, I wonder if you can say a little bit about what you're talking about does not mean a relationship that is totally smooth and blissful all the time, correct?
Right. Well, that's one of the fallacies that people believe about soulmates, is that as soon as they're, you know, they meet their soulmate, life will be totally different. They'll live happily ever after. They'll have the perfect relationship. They'll never argue. That it's going to be easy. Somehow we're just going to fit together so perfectly that it's going to be bliss.
Right.
Well, that's not true, because oftentimes our most challenging karmic relationships are with our soulmate, because they have a lot to teach us. And you know, I know for my own self that, you know, I grow more from the challenging relationships than I do from the ones that are just ease and people who never argue with me, et cetera.
Right.
So, you know, we have our own design as far as, you know, what lessons our divine complement, our soulmate, is meant to teach us. Maybe it is to kind of loosen our conditioning and to embrace someone who's totally opposite to us. And this is a phenomena that is very true in complementary relationship, that they are opposites. They are not alike.
Hmm.
Yeah, they may have some similar likes and dislikes, but the way they approach life, the way they think, you know, they are usually on opposite ends of the continuum.
Hmm.
And why? Because they are meant to learn from the reflection of the other, to integrate and balance their own masculine and feminine. Now we're moving into the arena of, you know, how complementary relationship works and it does in the evolution of our consciousness. You know, it helps us to grow in our intelligence. You know, if your husband is a whiz, you know, at business, and he's a very profound marketer, or he has a very scientific kind of mind, it may be that you're to learn from that reflection and learn, you know, how to be a little more thinking in how you approach something, rather than constantly relying on your intuition or your feelings. So you're meant to integrate the intelligence of your partner so that you become more balanced. And Carl Jung, as you know, certainly, talked about, you know, those different functions, the sensei, the intuitive, you know, the thinking and emotional functions that are important to have in balance. Well, our divine complement actually, you know, helps us to really come into a good integration. If we learn from that reflection, but most of us are walking around with fog glasses on, and we don't see that soul purpose to our partnership.
It sounds like I want to see if this would be an example of what you're talking about. For instance, my husband's an engineer, and for many years when I would have what I thought was a, quote, engineering kind of problem, I would go to him to fix it. But as the years have gone by, I've started to develop my own ways of looking at some of these, quote, problems that arise, and try and do it myself, developing that part of me. Is that what you mean? Like you
Exactly. That's a beautiful example of how you have grown to incorporate some of what you consider his talents, and now you call them your own. Now you can do that same kind of problem solving. And, you know, a lot of that intelligence that you're getting, you know, you're learning from him, from watching him, certainly. But a lot of it is being actually infused through your just being, you know, in love with him and being in his presence. And because of that divine connection, you become smarter.
That's good news.
Well, it's a wonderful thing.
Yes, it is.
It is a wonderful thing.
I was wondering, in this in all that we're discussing and all the ideas we're discussing, what about the idea, I know you said your divine complement, you have lessons to learn from that person.
Right.
Spiritual lessons, for sure. And are there tasks for each person to accomplish through this relationship?
Of course. And, you know, the most important task is to learn about love. To learn about, you know, the levels of love that we can have in relationship. You know, how to be more compassionate, how to be more of an active listener, how to support somebody. And maybe we're going to have to support them financially. Maybe we're going to have to help them to grow. Maybe we have to really get on their case about, you know, some of their shortcomings. And, you know, it really, you know, it depends on what you decided in the beginning. You know, for some compliments, you know, what they need to learn is how to have an equal relationship, one that honors both, you know, the male and the woman. That seems to be the primary focus, especially now, because we're really at an evolutionary stage where we need to really have equality in relationship. And that doesn't mean a woman earning the same amount of money as a man.
Right.
What it means is that she is honored for her unique way of expressing herself as a woman, not as a man. And how you, you know, how you make compromises in relationship and how you grow to appreciate and honor the equality of your partner is so important, so important.
Well, I was wondering if you feel this would be a good time to talk a little bit about how the idea of divine complement has continued to manifest more and more concretely through time.
Okay.
Going back, I know in your book you discussed going back to Aphrodite and Adonis.
Right.
And then Jesus and Mary, and now for each person to look at themselves. And so I was wondering if you felt this was a good time to sort of explain how you see that working in the evolution of consciousness.
Well, you know, certainly. In Divine Complement, I take what I call the Stellar Promise, and I look at... in the beginning, when God created us, we were unified in our intelligence. We didn't have this condition that we call split soul. We were balanced in the male and female. And we were intricately linked with our soulmate and divine complement. Well, our descension, you know, into the earth was what we call the fall. And that created a separation called split soul. Well, throughout the legacy of our evolution, we have been given hints on what our spiritual task is. And I want to go back, and this is probably the biggest reason why I included the legacy of Jesus and Mary Magdalene in Divine Complement, because it best expresses the spiritual challenge and the spiritual task in relationship. Those who are excitedly waiting for the release of the Da Vinci Code, I'm sure they'll want to listen closely, because a lot of what we're being told right now through a lot of profound writers is that there has been, you know, enough evidence to point to Mary Magdalene's marriage to Jesus Christ, and certainly her role in the Gospels is central. But I unearthed a series of clues that are really phenomenal, that point to a mythological legacy that Jesus and Mary came to create together. And their mythological legacy was the Adonis and Aphrodite myth. It was probably divinely inspired and written about 300 years before Jesus and Mary's incarnation. And, you know, most people don't understand that mythology actually is like a blueprint. It's an underlying storyline of, you know, psychological and spiritual evolution. And we can imagine the mythic writers at that time, you know, having their hearts opened, and they brought through this incredible story. Well, many people viewed the story as what we call a resurrection myth. And there are a number of authors that believe that the story of Jesus Christ is actually just a reconstructed myth because it has so many similarities to some of the other pagan mythologies. But that's totally wrong. The truth is that the reason why Jesus and Mary Magdalene's, you know, real legacy followed the same patterns as the myth of Adonis and Aphrodite is because it was their underlying script. You know, they carried it into this incarnation, and they were to fulfill the milestones of that mythology. Now, the way I kind of stumbled upon this, I didn't really stumble on it. Actually, it all kind of started about 10 years ago with a dream I had in which Jesus showed up in my dream. And in the dream, I was in England, and there was a monolith that was coming out of the water, and there was a woman who was climbing the monolith, and she was really excited, and she got to the top, and it was like, hooray. And then I was shown this map, and the map was of Gaul and Provence and England. It was a very ancient map. And the Pyrenees and Provence was all highlighted. And then all of a sudden, I was in the presence of Jesus Christ. And Jesus looked like nothing like any of the pictures we've ever seen of him. His hair was cut short, cropped. His eyes weren't blue, they were brown, and he had the most gentle face. And he was wearing a woolen kind of tunic that I remember feeling in the dream, and the feel was very soft and beautiful. And the communion that I had through that transcendent experience altered my life. It was of such a profound love, I couldn't forget it. At the end of the dream, Jesus told me that we had to go back to Nazareth, and that was a very personal message for me that ended up having me travel to Israel. But what that map really represented was I was being given clues to Jesus's exile and Mary Magdalene's exile from Judea to Gaul after the crucifixion. So in my knowledge and truth, Jesus didn't die at the crucifixion, although he was crucified. The mythology that, you know, I was able to pinpoint came through a series of clues, and it was interesting because, you know, in reading the gospel narratives, I noticed that there were always three Marys that traveled with Jesus. And, you know, having a psychological mind and always understanding, you know, the real reason why those kinds of synchronicities happen is, they're part of a meaningful play, right? Three Marys in my life, you know, mother, sister, and my divine complement.
So three aspects of the feminine.
Right, the three faces of the feminine aspect of God, and the virgin, you know, the mother, and the sacred lover. So I knew that synchronicity was very, you know, important. So what I did was I started looking for the meaning of the name Mary, and I came up with 72 different meanings for the name Mary, and I traced it all the way back to meaning Myrrh of the Sea. And Myrrh of the Sea was also a name given to both Isis and to Aphrodite. So I said, okay, well, Mary Magdalene was obviously ruled by the goddess archetype, Aphrodite. So therefore, Jesus and Mary Magdalene's underlying mythology would have been Aphrodite and Adonis. And as we remember, Jesus was often referred to as Adonai. And during that period of time, I think it was really well recognized that, you know, the similarity between Jesus Christ and Adonis, and that, you know, they were full well expecting a Messiah to come in, and it wasn't only the, you know, prophecies of Isaiah that was guiding them, it was also the mythologies that they knew you know, had meaning and that, you know, held a promise of a great spiritual leader and teacher who they thought would be king and everything would be all hunky-dory once he, you know, ruled.
Once he arrived.
So in, you know, following, you know, I mean, those are two clues. I came up with a great deal more that my book, you know, really expands on, and it demonstrates that we can learn a lot more about Jesus and Mary Magdalene's personalities, their quest for enlightenment, and understanding the true purpose of their destiny by looking at their mythology, because it's like their script. It's the script and storyline for the, you know, three-act play that they play out in their life. And with that piece of information, we have like the blueprint of their spiritual awakening. We have the blueprint of their psychology. You know, for instance, Jesus as Adonis would have been a very charismatic Aries personality with a lot of fire. And we know that he was very, you know, politically oriented, a leader, but to, you know, to understand that he came in with that Aries influence in his psychology is important. And that, you know, Mary Magdalene not only was to be the goddess of love and to reflect that feminine aspect of God's faith, but that she had another side, because in the myth, after Adonis is killed by the wild boar, he descends into the underworld with Persephone. And Persephone was another part of, you know, Mary Magdalene's personality. And I explore all that in the book. And what we come out with is something very important. We come out with an understanding that, number one, Jesus Christ wasn't a lone, resurrected, divine God-man, like we've been told by, you know, Christianity. We're now shown that there were two who came, who had a profound mutual destiny to fulfill, and that was to light the path for others. And it's, you know, my understanding through, you know, having researched all this material and through the divine dreams and communications that I've had, that, you know, the equality of the relationship did develop as the years progressed, in which Mary took more of a frontline role as a spiritual teacher and a master in her own right. In the beginning, she was very supportive of Jesus' mission, and she helped him in every way that a woman would. We have to remember, though, that, you know, in those days, women, you know, weren't even allowed to speak, you know, and unless they were, you know, acknowledged. So, you know, our legacy has moved on from there, but we can learn a great deal from the relationship of Jesus and Mary Magdalene and from their mythology to help us understand that it's always been pointing to the unification of stellar complements in order for us to truly realize the kingdom of God. And Jesus speaks to this in the Gospels of Thomas when he says, you know, when you make the two one, and the inside like the outside, and the hand, and the foot another foot, then you will, you know, receive the keys to the kingdom of God. Well, what he meant was, well, he was giving a secret initiation that helps us to understand that in order for us to know God, we have to know both the masculine and feminine side of God, and we have to integrate those two intelligences fully, and our complement is there to help us, to guide us on that path to spiritual unity. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, all these resurrection myths aren't resurrection myths only. They're reconciliation myths in which we're trying to repair the original fall of Adam and Eve. And when Adonis and Aphrodite came together. I bet there was great hoopla in the heavens that their destiny could be fulfilled, as there is for every soul met on earth, you know.
Right.
So that, know that, you know, your soulmate relationship is significant in your own spiritual evolution, and that you grow from it, you know, learn about love. You might have a huge destiny together, maybe to write a book, you know, maybe, you know, to raise incredible children. And fulfilling that promise is the most important thing you can do in your life. So my book takes the quest for looking for a soulmate from, you know, how can I find my soulmate without dating, and to, you know, what's the real spiritual gain I am going to get through my quest to know this person who's come into my life in a miraculous way. And, you know, I know I'm supposed to love him. And what does this person have to teach me? Looking at his attributes and, you know, all that makes him who he is, or she who she is. And really feeding on it, like they're a banquet for you. And because they do, they complete you and fulfill you like nothing else can.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all searching for that level of love, and it's God's love that we're questing for. And through touching that divine connection with our soulmate, we come to know God more.
Absolutely. And it sounds like we have a personal experience. I really like how you said, we realize the kingdom of God, and it would seem very natural then that the more that humanity does that, each individual person, through their partnerships, through their divine complement, the more all of humanity moves towards a higher level. Is that kind of how you see it?
Well, you know, I like to say, you know, focus on you and your relationship.
Yes.
Because,
absolutely.
You know, and we pray that, you know, everyone has as beautiful of a complementary relationship that I know that you, Kim, have with your divine complement and with your husband.
Thank you.
And,
but you can't go get
your
one.
Your wisdom and
right.
What you can share about your relationship helps others. And that's why I include so many stories in Divine Complement, because we need real examples of relationships that work, that are meaningful, and where you look at what's the psychological task, and you look into the depth of the relationship as examples, because it is a learning ground. And, you know, when, you know, our love, you know, magnifies in this world, certainly, you know, as we evolve, we touch the lives of many people who evolve also through our example. And the beautiful stories that I heard certainly helped me to evolve, to understand the beauty of soulmate relationships. Even though, you know, my own soulmate took off and would not, you know, embrace me as his authentic divine complement because he had too many lists of have to have, and, you know, it was a disappointing thing, but I, you know, really got filled through the stories of people who had, you know, met their divine complement and magically had everything click for them to, you know, show up on Maui and get married and on the beach and or where whatever similar scenario that I heard. It contributed a lot to me and to my understanding of soulmate relationships.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. How does one continue to hope and to seek and to explore divine complement if they have an experience like the one you just shared? Your divine complement doesn't stay with
right.
you.
Well, you know, there's certainly going to be some healing to do after, you know, a bad relationship ends. And a lot of people, you know, and if we've had a number of failed relationships, we're going to get a little bit jaded right?
Absolutely.
And I can say I was one of those jaded ones until I started gathering the material for this book. But I think, you know, healing from the wounds after a separation, and maybe you were with your soulmate for a long time and your divine complement, and the relationship failed, you know. Maybe, you know, you were abandoned for somebody else. You know, it's going to take time to heal those wounds that you have to confront in order to make peace and to forgive. And that forgiveness process will liberate us. And it doesn't mean that we'll never, you know, have another relationship. Because, you know, the truth is that, you know, not everybody finds their divine complement. Not everybody has them come into their life. Not everybody marries them. But they can have numerous opportunities for a complementary relationship with someone else. And some of them will be karmic and will maybe fulfill them better than their twin soul ever could have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it's perfect at this dimension of spirit, it's not perfect here for, you know, our incarnation. And, you know, always after the end of a relationship, spending enough time to be able to, you know, address, you know, what the lessons were in the relationship. What was it that I learned? What was it that I don't want to re-experience? Looking at, you know, what was the baggage that I brought into the relationship that harmed it? If I need to forgive myself, then I need to forgive myself. If I need to forgive them, I need to forgive them and go on from there.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes divine complements even have an opportunity for a second chance. And I included numerous second chance stories in my book of people who, you know, in the first go-around, it didn't work for them. And they parted without getting married, or they divorced early. And then 15 years later, they show up in each other's lives again, and, you know, with more spiritual maturity and psychological maturity and a better heart.
Yeah.
And so even though, you know, divine complements fail, they're still connected, always.
All the work that you described for healing and asking those questions and working through those issues sounds like preparation for the next meeting.
It's preparation maybe for the next meeting. Maybe there isn't going to be a next meeting. But it's preparation for an opportunity to love again. Because, you know, this life is all about having relationships.
Right.
And, you know, we need to start seeing that as our true spiritual quest. That nothing can fulfill us more than a marriage partner, a buddy, a deep relationship. Because it's the learning ground for love, and that's what we're here to do. We're here to love and be love, to give love copiously everywhere, and to have a joyful relationship with someone. And you know statistically, women, you know, take more time to heal themselves after a relationship ends, and men go on to the next. But, you know, I think it's important for both to do a strong kind of inventory of, you know, their failings. And maybe it's they'll come out with it knowing that they didn't fail, that, you know, it was their partner. And not to cast blame, but to love oneself again is important.
Well, thank you. I'm wondering, we're pretty much at the end of our show.
We are.
And
well, before we get off, you know, I'd really like to invite people to go to my website.
Yes, I was going to ask you, please.
Uh-huh. And my website is ariadnegreen.com, and it's A-R-I-A-D-N-E, green, like the color, green.com. And when you get on the website, explore the pages. There's a very beautiful divine emanation called Magdalene's Rose, which is kind of proof that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were twin souls, and you can read the story about that, and you can find out about my books, both Ariadne's Book of Dreams, Divine Complement, and soon I'll be posting information on Divine Complement Forever, which will be out in December. So if you go to my site and you put subscribe to my newsletter, I can then send you an announcement when Divine Compliment has been released. It's due to be released this summer, probably in July. And when the book is in bookstores and on Amazon, I'll send out an announcement. So my newsletter also will have lots of stories that I constantly am hearing from soulmates. And I invite anybody to post any soulmate story on my site, too. So, yeah, go to my website, or you can email me at info@ariadnegreen.com.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And this has been a joy, Kim.
Wonderful. I'm very glad, and I'd like to thank our producer, Don Newsom, who so generously has provided us with space for our discussion today, Ariadne. And I'd like to invite everyone to stay at this station for the upcoming Dawn and Wind show. And also next week, Rochelle will be having Barbara and Sheila Powell as guests, and they are internationally known psychic detectives. And your calls and questions will be welcome. So until next week, this is Kim Arndt standing in for Rochelle Sparrow. Good night, everyone.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.